I don't know if I'm ready for electric cars because I grew up in Dalton, Georgia, and the first car that I ever had was a 1960 Buick Invicta. And my dad charged me $20 to buy the car from him. So the story is like this. We started our mechanic shop in like 1997 because my dad, who was an engineer in Dalton, Georgia, was tired of taking our Chrysler Town & Country van to the mechanic shop to get fixed. So the transmission went out on our Chrysler Town & Country minivan, and it cost $1,500. That's a lot of money when you're broke and you got 5-6 kids. So we fix the transmission, and then 2 months later, the transmission goes out again. Mechanic shop is like, yeah, sorry, you're gonna have to pay another $1,500. He's like, well, this seems like the right type of business to be in because anytime a problem happens with the car, I'm just gonna charge someone $1,500 to do it. So in 1997, we decided to rent out a shop on 1803 Murray Avenue, which was a mechanic shop with a single garage bay. I think it was like $1,200 a month or $1,500 a month. And I remember we had this big sign that was outside that said, oil changes $19.99, tune-ups $49.99. And I was sitting there talking to my brother one day. I was like, man, wouldn't it be so cool if like 20 people came in and got tune-ups? That'd be $1,000 that we can make. And he's like, well, you know, there's more money that could be made. Someone can come in and get an engine replaced, and that could be thousands of dollars. And I'm like, that's crazy that you can make that much money. And I'm like 7 or 8 years old. So we started the mechanic shop business, and the way that we really made the majority of our money was not from the mechanic business, because we weren't really mechanics. My dad was a mechanical engineer, but he wasn't a mechanic. He wasn't the oil change and brake and tune-up engine replacement type of guy. We made our money from the hustle of selling used tires. And here's what we did. We would go to Walmart after hours and see all of the tires that they would throw away. And so in Georgia, they have something called a used tire disposal fee. It was, I think, $1 at the time, and I think it got up to like $3 or $5. And so companies that would change tires, that would sell new tires to customers, they would take their old tires and dispose of them. And so those used tires were actually worth money. And in order to throw them away, the government would charge you a disposal fee to get rid of that tire. So we decided, hey, everyone would want to give us these used tires because we're taking away a liability from them. So we would go and then figure out which tires were actually good, which ones were bad. And if there were enough good tires, because some customers would change all four tires on their car when one of them went bad. And so you'd have a car that had three almost brand new tires and then one tire just exploded. They decided to change all four tires. And hey, that's just something that rich people do. They're like, oh, I don't want mismatched tires. I want all brand new tires. I want brand new Michelins. And I'm a Douglas Extra Track kind of guy. And if you know what I mean by that, then I got automatic respect for you. But needless to say, we would go to Walmart, Pep Boys, all these other mechanic shops and tire shops and buy or just actually take all their used tires. We wouldn't buy them because they were gonna pay to get rid of them. So we'd say, we'll just take them for free. And so the problem with that was some tires were actually in bad condition. Some of them have nails, some of them that needed patches. So we would repair them at our shop. We'd either put a patch in there or we'd put a plug. The ones that had like really bad damage and were not salvageable, we would just have to throw them away. And we never paid a dollar to throw them away. We would just find a dumpster locally and just throw the tires away anywhere we could find. I'm not gonna pay a dollar for that. So that's literally how we built our used tire business. And over the years, we just continued to build up our inventory. And I knew every single used tire that you could possibly imagine for every single car. And here's how it works when it comes to used tires. There's actually like a trick. There's a hack to getting cheaper tires for your car. And it's in manipulating the tire size. So let's say you have a car that has 225, 65, 15 tire size. 225 width, 65 aspect ratio in height, and 15 inch rim size. So the three numbers on any tire are gonna be 225 is the first one is a millimeter size of the width. The second one, the 65 number, is a percentage of that width, the percentage of the 225, as the height of your tire. So it means 65% of the 225 is the height of the tire. And then you'd have the 15, which is the rim size. So we're gonna do some very quick math here. So what I would always do, I'd take 225 divided by 25.4 because there's 25.4 centimeters in a foot. And that means that's the conversion from millimeters to inches. So I would take 225 divided by 25.4, and now we got 8.85. That means the tire is 8.85 inches wide. Then I take that 65% times 0.65, and now I know the height of that tire is 5.75 inches. And you multiply it by 2 because the height is on the top and the bottom of the tire. So we multiply that number by 2. Now we're at 11 and a half inches plus the rim size of 15. What does that mean? That means your overall tire height is 26 and a half inches, 26.52 inches to be exact. I was doing this math at age 7 and 8, by the way. And I figured, and I started doing this stuff in my head because I was just really, really good at it. That's probably why I've always been good at numbers, because I was trying to figure out how I can get someone the right tire size for their car without spending that much money. And here's how you do it. The tires that usually have a higher middle number are usually cheaper. Why? Because they're more popular. Because older cars did not have big rims. Older cars had smaller rims with taller tires. So all you need to do is just figure out whatever the height was of that tire and find a proportional tire with that same height. So just thinking about it, 225, 65, 15, I would say a tire that's a 205, 70, 15 is approximately the same height. 205, 70, 15 is the same as a 225, 65, 15. So let's just do that math. So the number is 26 and a half inches. We're trying to get to 26 and a half inches. We take the 205 number, divide it by 25.4. That's 8.07 inches multiplied by the aspect ratio, which is the 70. So it's 0.7. So that's 5.65 multiplied by 2 because it's the height of the top and bottom. Now you're at 11.29 inches or 11.3. And then you add 15 to it because it's the rim size. That's 26.3 inches. So meaning a 205 70 15 tire is only 0.2 inches shorter than a 225 65 15 tire. And when you're looking at the cost of these tires, I promise you the 225 65 15 is going to be way more expensive than the 205 70 15, just because they don't manufacture the 225 65 15 as much, especially during that time in the late 90s. So when a customer would come in and say, oh, well, I have 225, 65, 15 tires, and they would go to Walmart and they would go to every other shop, and because it's a rare tire size, you're not gonna be able to get a cheap brand. You'd have to get like a Goodyear or a Michelin, and it would cost like $400 for them to get those tires. I would offer them, hey, well, I have a tire that's pretty much the same exact height, and it's gonna be $50 cheaper. Okay, it's $50 cheaper. All they're looking for is a cheaper tire. As long as it's the same height, you're gonna be fine. And knowing that I can buy that tire for like $40 a piece, I would buy the set, literally drive down to Walmart, it'd be $160. I wouldn't drive, I was 9 years old. You know, my dad would take me, or someone would take me, the mechanic would take me, whoever it was. We'd call Walmart before we go in there. And I remember we had this this sheet from Walmart in their tire shop. It lists all the tire sizes and the price next to it. And they'd have Douglas Extra Track was always the cheapest brand of tire. Then they had the Uniroyal tires. They were the second cheapest. And the most expensive ones were always like the Goodyears and the Michelins. So we knew the different brands that were out there. And over time, you figure out which tires are cheap and which ones are expensive. The cheapest one is always that 155-80-13 because no one drives on 13-inch wheels anymore. But over the years, you can figure out which tires are the cheapest for the specific size height that you're looking for. And that arbitrage of knowledge is how we ran our entire mechanic shop, how we ran our tire shop, and how I got into the audio, the car, automotive, and audio business. So I probably mounted, balanced, and installed over 10,000 sets of tires before I turned 18. That was just how we grew up. We grew up selling used tires and then new tires and then repairing tires. And then around middle school, I started buying and selling wheels and tires because people would want upgraded rims. And so that same knowledge applied from the used tire shop to the rim shop. Because if you know a customer comes in and they have 225, 65, 15 tires from the factory and they have to pay $400 to replace those tires. And you know you can get a brand new set of wheels, like let's call them 17-inch wheels, for $50 a piece, and you can get tires for $30 a piece. Your cost is only $320 for a brand new set of wheels and tires. And now you can convince the client, hey, not only can you get brand new wheels and tires for close to what you would spend, instead of you spending $400, you'd spend $599, but you also keep all of your old wheels and tires, so you have a spare whenever you need it. It's the best of both worlds. Oh, and by the way, when it's time to replace these tires for these new 17-inch wheels that you got, they're gonna be half the price of your 15-inch tires. Again, the arbitrage of knowledge is what allowed us to sell those wheels and tires. So that theme has been consistent throughout my life, which is, even though we were working in a mechanic shop and sometimes plugging tires for $5 a piece, sometimes selling new tires by driving to Walmart, picking up something that was a proportional height and then selling it to the customer and trying to make the difference on the spread, upgrading someone's wheels and tires to a brand new wheel and tire and giving them the value proposition of upgrading their entire system and making it look good. It was always about the difference in knowledge that we had compared to the customer. And I realized that this is exactly how business is done. Amazon is a $1 trillion company. And Amazon basically is a website that allows people to buy and sell their stuff. And so Amazon basically started in the category of books. And they decided, Jeff Bezos decided, since there's over 1 million different SKUs of books, if I can figure out how to categorize every single type of book and every single genre and every single title and every single author, then I could categorize and sell anything. And that was the industry that he started with. So if you grew up in the 2000s, you knew Amazon was the place to go to buy your books for college and university. Over the years, they started adding more products to their product line. And what Amazon does is it gets all the attention from people, knowing that they have all this traffic to their website, and they charge people a premium, 20%, to sell on their website. And then when they see that a product is very profitable, they create it on their own and they ban that seller from selling that product anymore. All of this is a very advanced way of saying the arbitrage of their knowledge and understanding the value of traffic to their website and being able to get paid for people to use their AWS and their online platform and getting paid to learn which products sell the most and make the most amount of money. So Amazon sellers, beware. If you're selling a product that makes a lot of money, Amazon might decide to just swoop in and create and manufacture the same exact product that you're selling, and they're gonna beat you at that game because they don't have to pay the 20% seller's fee on Amazon. And on top of that, they can buy in bulk directly from China and do it way better than you. That's why they have the Amazon products, like the bestseller products that they have online. Arbitrage of knowledge. And this is like the recurring theme that I've seen in almost every single business. And it started with me working in a mechanic shop at age 7 and 8. In middle school, I started taking that arbitrage of knowledge and selling stuff online. So I remember being in Dalton Middle School, and I would tell my mom to come pick me up in her beat up 1995 Nissan Sentra. And it was because I didn't want to take the bus home because school lets out at 3:30, 3:45. You got to wait for the bus. By the time you get home, it's like 4:30. You go in, you package your products, and you try to get to the post office. You don't have enough time because the post office closes at 5. And most of the time, if you're not in by 4:57, they're not going to let you in because they're just lazy government employees. I learned that in middle school. So I'd tell my mom, hey, I need you to come and pick me up after school. I didn't have a phone. I had a flip phone that wasn't connected. And I'd just like try to be the cool kid. Like, oh yeah, I got a flip phone, but my parents didn't connect it until after hours. Because I just wanted to fit in, right? But you didn't fit in when your mom pulls up at a 1995 Nissan Sentra with a big dude, like not for hire sign engraved on the side of it with some 13-inch hubcap spinners. That's what we were driving at the time. So my mom would come and pick me up from the middle school, take me home, so I had enough time to package up these amplifiers, take them to the post office, and sell them online. These were things that I was doing at age 12, 13, I was buying car audio wholesale from different distributors. I was using websites like ubid.com, these auction websites before a lot of people even knew about them. And I would take the arbitrage of knowledge that I had by selling them online. So I would buy a product online in a place where people didn't know that it existed, and I would sell it to the public on eBay for a premium because people didn't know where to get that product for cheaper. Right now, people are doing that by buying stuff from Alibaba or manufacturing it on their own and then selling it on Amazon, eBay, whatever. There's even like garage sales that people do. They'll go to garage sales, they'll take a picture of the item, look it up online, see how much it costs, and buy the item, sell them online. There's people that go to TJ Maxx, Ross, Marshalls. They'll go to their closeout section and their sales and their clearance section and see which toys, which products, which shoes, which clothes they can buy at closeout prices and then sell them online. The arbitrage of knowledge still exists, and there's so many ways to make money. But this was my story, that I started at 7, 8 years old selling used tires, new tires. And then by middle school, I started selling car audio and wheels. At some point, we realized that we could make a lot more money by selling brand new wheels and tires. We opened up a store. When I say we, my brothers and I opened up a store in Walnut Square Mall in Dalton, Georgia. I remember the first big sale that I made, it was in like 2005. I was in Walnut Square Mall and we had just gotten our first shop open, Joker's Audio, and a customer came in and I sold him a flip down TV for $600. It was like a 10 inch flip down TV. Again, arbitrage of knowledge. I knew how to run a couple of wires in the ceiling of a car. I knew that I could buy this TV wholesale from a car audio distributor in Atlanta for like $100. I'd sell it to the customer for like $350. I'd charge them $200 for installation and another $50 for wiring and adapters. That was the first sale that we ever made. It was $600 the very first day that we were open in business. And from then on, I've just been an entrepreneur on steroids, and that's all I ever wanted to do. So I have like all these different crazy stories of how I was trying all these different types of businesses. I remember I started a graphic design business somewhere around middle school. Basically, I just wanted to create stickers. Our shop was called Joker's Audio, and I would get a plotter. The plotter was a Master XY300P. Was the model of that plotter. It was a vinyl plotter that I bought on eBay. It was exactly $699.99 plus $75 for shipping, because I remember when that transaction hit for $774.99, it was so much money. But I decided all the money that I was making online sales, I would invest it into this other business. This is like at age 13. I got that plotter and I learned very quickly how to make designs on a computer. And I actually made this Joker head, this Joker's Audio sticker that we would put on every customer's car. And what we would tell them is, if you wanted to keep warranty on the products that you bought from us, you have to keep the sticker on your vehicle. And that's how we got almost all of Dalton, Georgia to have Joker's Audio stickers. Like, no matter where you turned, someone had a Joker's Audio sticker. It got so popular that people wanted to buy these stickers even if they didn't buy any electronics from us, because it was just like the cool thing in town. But how did I learn that? I learned it from this other shop that was in Dalton called Stereo One. They would put these big Stereo One stickers on their really, really nice cars, and they drive it around town, and it's like automatic branding. Wow, look at Stereo One with that Mustang on 22s or that, you know, F-150 on 26 inch rims. Like, that's really cool. We want to be like that. So I bought this plotter, I learned all the different brands of Oracal, Orafol, 3M, how to design stickers, and every single customer that came into the shop, I'd slap a Joker's Audio sticker on their car. And I told them, if you want to keep warranty on your products, you got to keep the Joker's Audio sticker. Well, over the years, I got really good at designing stickers. And I started making signs for businesses. I remember one shop called New York Fashion. That guy ripped me off. I only charged him $120, and it was like, it's exactly why I don't do business with Arabs, because they're just so cheap sometimes. But over the years, we became friends. There was a dentist out in Marietta. I remember I charged like $1,000 to basically make a sign of just this like two teeth with a toothbrush. And all it said was just dentist at the top. And like, keep in mind, this is like middle school and high school days, and I'm running these businesses. And it was just a fun thing to do. So you fast forward a couple of years and you start experimenting with building up your credit. At age 18, I got my first PacSun credit card because I knew the importance of building up my credit. And somewhere I read or I learned that you have to have three different types of things on your credit in order to really maximize your credit. And so I got a credit card from PacSun, had like a $250 limit. And then I got a personal loan from this local financial company. It was like $300 or $400, and I would pay them back like $320 or $350 just because I was like, hey, is it reporting to my credit? All right, cool. And then I realized the retail credit cards don't add any value to your credit. The personal loans, they come off the moment you stop paying the loan, and you needed real credit cards in order to build up your credit. Over time, built up a very strong credit score, a strong credit profile, took cash advance on all those credit cards, and was able to buy an apartment complex. In law school, I started buying and selling cars. I even helped one of my friends buy a car, taught him the game. And all of this stuff was just the arbitrage of knowledge. That's all it is. It's just the difference in knowledge that you have compared to everyone else. And that's how you monetize. So now, in 6 years into my law practice, it's nothing different. It's only bigger numbers. So why we have the CEO Lawyer Bootcamp to teach lawyers how to build personal injury practices and how to maximize case values is because I learned this business, I learned this game, and now you gotta pay me for that knowledge. The CEO Lawyer Academy, teaching lawyers about technology and social media and running ads on all these different platforms. You have to pay for access to that knowledge. If you come to our summit, our tickets are the most expensive out of any event, but we teach you things that no one else does. We're teaching you how to leverage that arbitrage of knowledge. And so this is my life story, is every single step of the way when I'm learning how to change tires, I'm learning the differences in tire sizes, I'm learning how to buy something from Walmart or buy something from UBID or buy something from a distributor and sell it online or sell it locally. The arbitrage of knowledge is basically what got me here. And so that's why I'm just a huge advocate for really investing in your education, because no matter what, you will figure out a way to monetize and leverage that education. There's so many stories like growing up, one that really pops out in my mind, and I think this is why I became a personal injury lawyer, to be completely honest. At age 18, I decided I was going to create a wholesale company called AMD Wholesalers, Awad Master Distributors. And if you go to 618 Fifth Avenue right now, even to this day, you'll still see a big sign that says AMD Wholesalers outside. And you'll see at the bottom right corner that I made that sign. It was like one of the last signs I ever made with my vinyl plotter, because I eventually stopped doing that business altogether. And I signed my name. I think it had to be like 2009, 2011. Like it was a while ago. That AMD Wholesalers was, it had to be 2009 actually, or 08. Because the story is that I started selling car audio electronics wholesale to other shops in the area. We started getting so good at buying stuff for wholesale, we decided to sell it to other people, to literally sell it to our competitors. My first transaction, I actually first called my friend Michael from high school and said, hey, let's go into business together. Let's be partners. This is so crazy. I don't think I've ever shared this ever. In 2008, like after I graduated high school, I wanted to start a wholesale company. And one of my friends, Michael from high school, I hit him up and I said, hey man, how about we become partners in this business? I set up a Yahoo email account for both of us, you know, Michael at AMD Wholesalers, Ali at AMD Wholesalers. And I told him, hey man, I got my mom's car for the day. I loaded it up with subwoofers, speakers, amplifiers, capacitors. We're gonna drive from Dalton to Chattanooga and just stop by every single shop and sell them this shit from the trunk of our car. And okay, yeah, the plan sounds good. Let's go, let's do it. It got up to the final day where we were supposed to actually go and meet all of these different car audio shop owners. And Michael just ditched me completely. Didn't want to come, came up with some sort of excuse, said he was busy, didn't even bother. And so I had to make a decision. Am I going to wait for my partner and rely on him, or am I just going to do this thing on my own? And that's probably why I don't have any partners to this day. Because I just would rather make a bet on me than anyone else in the world. Because I know what I'm capable of. I don't know what you're capable of. So I go, drive to Chattanooga in my mom's Mercedes that she never got the benefit of being able to use. And I was dressed up in a polo shirt. I'm 17, 18 years old. And I'm trying to sell all the stuff from the trunk of my car. I remember selling a couple of flip-down monitors. I remember selling some capacitors. I had a receipt book in my hand, and I would just write a handwritten receipt, take the cash from these people, and go. And after a couple of weeks, they'd call me and say, hey, this electronic went bad. Hey, I need a refund. Hey, this thing, I need help with this. And very quickly, with just like a couple of customers, I realized, dude, there's not enough money in this wholesale game. Like, I can't survive off of a 15, 20% markup and then still have to be responsible for the returns. Because with gas and driving up to Chattanooga and them only making small orders like $500 or $1,000 at the time, it just didn't make sense. So I decided, all right, I'm not going to do any more wholesale orders unless it's a big order. So I connected with these guys out in New Orleans. And they were Palestinian Muslim people like me. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. We're going to connect. This is going to be great. They wanted access to our ACT flip-down monitors and their in-dash TVs, which we were getting at like an extremely discounted rate directly from the manufacturer, and our ELF audio speakers, which we were the only ones that had direct access to the manufacturer at the time. There's another story about ELF audio. I'll tell you how we bought out this entire Chinese manufacturer with my brothers while I was in college. It's a crazy story. But I decided to place an order. This company decided to place an order with me. I filled up this trailer and I drove with my dad and my brother to New Orleans, Louisiana. We unloaded all the stuff. They gave us all the checks. It was like $18,000 worth. And they said, all right, you can cash the first check. And then every week, every 2 weeks, you deposit another check. And we probably made a couple thousand dollars on that deal. And it was great. We didn't have any return. There was maybe like one or two items returned, but we can eat that cost, right? If you're making $3,000 and someone has a return that's, you know, a couple hundred bucks, hey, I'll do that all day and twice on Sundays. Then, a couple of months later, they told me that they needed to place another order. I'm like, yes, let's go. I've already done this before. I'm super confident. I load up the trailer with $25,000 worth of electronics, and I drive my ass from Dalton, Georgia, to New Orleans, Louisiana. I pull up to House of Sounds. That was the name of the shop. And it's like in the hood next to the river. And I'm unloading all this stuff. And even as I'm unloading the stuff, you know, customers are coming into the shop and I'm helping them sell the products that I'm actually delivering. I had this set of door speakers that we were selling to them for like $120. And I sold it to the customer for $1,000 right there. Like, I made these people $800+ right there as I'm doing the delivery, just because I love sales and I knew my product so well. All they had to do was just install it. So like, I'm helping them make money and I'm delivering these products in person. So I'm thinking, we got a great relationship. I'm going to go above and beyond for my customers. This is my ticket. This is how I'm going to build a wholesale company and just become exorbitantly wealthy. It's just going to be awesome. Well, they give me a bunch of checks, post-dated checks, and say, all right, this is $25,000 worth of checks. You can deposit the first one next week. I'm like, all right, cool. Y'all got good credit with me. Let's do it. I go home. I'm really happy. I got $25,000 worth of checks. A week passes by and I deposit the first check and it bounces. This is like the first check for maybe $2,000. I call them. Hey man, what's going on? Oh bro, you know, there was something going on with the account. Don't worry about it. You know, the money is in there now. You can go ahead and deposit it again, or just give me a couple of days so it clears. There was some issue with the bank. Just deposit it, you know, this Friday. All right, cool. Waited a couple of days, deposit it again. It bounced. Okay, and I'm getting charged $35 for a check bounce fee. And if you've been broke, you know a non-sufficient fund fee or a check bouncing fee is like pouring lemon or salt over a paper cut. It's like you're already broke. I'm going to punish you for being even more broke. That's what a non-sufficient fund fee is. Needless to say, they kept dragging this on and on and on. Weeks went by, months went by, and finally I just called them and said, hey man, dude, do you plan on paying me at all? Because I'd rather just come over there and get my stuff. Seems like you're scamming me. He's like, who are you calling a scammer? Why don't you come over here and I'll put a bullet in your head if you want to get your stuff back? And this was at age 19 when I finally realized, all right, I'm not about that life. I don't want to risk my life for any amount of money. And I definitely never want to work and not get paid for it. That was the last time I ever did any transaction where I don't get paid upfront or there's not a guaranteed form of payment. I do not do deals unless I'm guaranteed payment. If I'm not guaranteed payment, I don't care what the risk is or what the financial reward is. I would rather consistently make my money, even if it's small, and know that it's coming in than to have a chance of not making any money at all. So at age 19, I realized I'm not going to do any sort of work where someone can pay me and their check bounces, which is probably why I don't do immigration law, I don't do criminal defense law, I don't do any sort of law where the client actually pays me the check up front. It's probably why I became a personal injury lawyer, because State Farm's checks don't bounce. So that's like a bunch of series of stories that tell you kind of how I got to this point today. And it's not because I'm smarter than anyone or because I got better grades or because I went to the best school or because I had more money or I came from a rich family. It's none of that. It's because I kept experimenting and getting as much experience as possible in building my education. And over time, over years and years and years, that education compounds and you can leverage it and sell it for as much as you want. And if you can figure out a way to make someone more money, they usually don't care how much you get paid, which is why I love commission jobs, which is why I love personal injury, because I don't get paid unless you get paid. So those are some of the stories of growing up as a child in Dalton, Georgia, why rims to riches is really my story, starting with selling used tires and fixing tires on 1803 Murray Avenue to building online businesses to becoming a number one Vossen dealer in the Southeast while I was in college to literally building the fastest growing law firm in America. That's my rims to riches story. Thank you all for joining us today. I hope this has been beneficial or at least helpful for some of you. And I look forward to your feedback because I'd love to know if you want to hear more of these stories. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you on the next one.